Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Millennial Love, a podcast from The Independent on everything to do with love, sexuality, identity and more. This week, I'm very excited to be joined by musician James McVeigh. For those who don't know, James is in a band called The Vamps. He came on the programme to discuss body image and how his relationship with his body has affected his relationship with his long-term girlfriend, Kirsty. It was really interesting to talk to James, least of all because this is a subject I feel like men seldom speak about publicly. I should add that we do touch on some dark subjects in this episode, such as eating disorders, so please do bear that in mind before you listen today. Also, keep an ear out at the end of the episode for some resources and organisations that can offer support to people experiencing some of the issues we discuss. Enjoy the show.
Hi, James.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Not too bad. Dodging the rain today, but I'm all right, thanks.
It's disgusting weather today. It's like, it's so boring and British to talk about the weather, but honestly, today it's vile. I mean, there's a proper storm, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Our dog is terrified of the rain and wind, so today's like a combo. So, because we don't have a garden, so we have to walk her to go to the toilet, and we have to carry her around the block, put her down under like a bush. She'll go for a wee, and then we pick her up again and take her home. She just won't walk at all.
That is so, I mean, I don't blame her. I don't want to walk in that either. That's so cute. You have to carry her like a baby.
I know.
So let's start off by talking a bit about your new single, Better, which I understand can be interpreted as being about relationships. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So I guess lyrically, on the surface, it's a song that can be perceived, you know, like a normal relationship song, I guess. But a lot of what we're trying to do with our new album is talk about wider themes than just sort of one-on-one relationships. The album's called Cherry Blossom, which I think invokes kind of a sense of like rebirth, and a new chapter, which is really relevant for us in the band. And, you know, we came up with this whole theme and this concept, last year. But bizarrely now with COVID, it's like it's kind of got a new meaning to us in a way. And I think the song Better, you know, that the line is, did things get better or did we get used to it? I think it's like, and also like, we can do better than this. I think it's also that notion of maybe people were kind of blindly walking through life before coronavirus. I definitely lived probably more selfishly than I do now. And I think, you know, if there's anything to take from the pandemic, admittedly not much, but if there is something, it's that sense of coming together as a community. Like, you know, the fact that people have set up WhatsApp groups on their streets, or people have been doing shopping for elderly relatives. Like, I've met so many more neighbors that I didn't know I had in the past couple of months. So I think like we're trying to shout a little bit about that with this music, and that sense of, yeah, we can do better than this. We're sort of speaking about a time, yeah, last year maybe, where I think a lot of us got very used to just living, especially in London where I am. You get used to living within your parameters and sort of like tunnel vision of like, right, this is what I want to achieve and I'm going to do that. And it's quite an insular sort of mindset. And I think it's kind of been turned on its head a little bit. We want to interact with people now. We want to be outside in nature. We want to help each other. And, you know, like us Brits sort of quite often get portrayed as people that are I guess like polite, but not really in a meaningful way. You know, like we're scared to not say please and thank you like 10 times when we're given food in a restaurant or whatever. But now it's almost like we actually want to... to be that stereotype as opposed to just being it, you know, to avoid awkwardness. So I think, yeah, it's been a real switch I felt in my life and the people around me. And I do think that we try and cover some of that feeling in the new album.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting that you wrote it before all of this started happening as well. And I think just taking it to within the context of a relationship then, do you think it's about that idea of doing better and thinking outside of your kind of insular world? Is it about kind of not getting caught up in the things that don't matter, I guess, because now we've all been given this wider sense of perspective. So it's like, is it about not succumbing to those petty arguments and just actually thinking, taking a step back and being like, no, we are above that.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's been a lot of reevaluation in people's lives, and there's been like a realignment of priorities, and also a real like soul searching, I think, within each of us. I think, you know, I'm the sort of person that revolves heavily around being like supported and almost like propped up by people around me. You know, touring with the band, there's like a crew of, I don't know, 12 guys, and we're always there together. It's like a security network that I have, and I've been like that all my life with friends and relationships in our band and my family and stuff. And I think, you know, there was a period in coronavirus where we couldn't really have that support around us. You know, yeah, you can be on the phone and FaceTime and Zoom and whatever, but I think a lot of people really struggle from reducing that human to human contact. I think that this album that we are doing, it's kind of saying that's really, really important, and almost like the essence of what it means to be human is to have, you know, each other around you and to value and cherish that in a way that perhaps we haven't done before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been such a shift. Now, I know that you were supposed to get married in November, weren't you, to your long-term girlfriend? So what, I mean, obvious reasons why you decided to postpone, but I know that some people were thinking, fuck it, we'll just have, you know, the smaller ceremony with 30, now 15 people. So what made you guys decide to postpone it?
Genuinely, I know everyone says it, but I only want to get married once. We're very lucky in both of our lives that we have a few groups of people, you know, friends from home and then people that to do with the band. And, you know, Kirsty's did a degree, then a master's. So she's got like two groups of friends there. Now she's working full time, so she's got another group. And I just think we'd always regret not doing the proper thing. Also, there's a few people, like elderly relatives, that are definitely in the vulnerable category. And I think even if it was made legal tomorrow, for example, I think we'd still feel a little bit irresponsible getting 200 people in a room this side of Christmas. I'd hate for us to get married with like an underlying feeling of like tension or nervousness. And I think, you know, hopefully we're going to get married next Halloween now, which is funny because I'm like the least like fun person like that. I'm not the sort of person that would dress up and do all that, but it's going to be Halloween. And I think hopefully by then coronavirus will be something that we remember, but it's sort of like we're definitely through it. So I don't really want to do something in the thick of it. And I think, look, there's a hell of a lot worse things happening than me having to reschedule my wedding. So I think for Kirsty and I, we just sort of thought it's not the be all or end all. We'd rather do it properly when it's safe to do so.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, you like you said, you know, you only want to get married once. If you're going to do it, you want to do it properly. And, you know, forgetting about the logistics of everything, just the general mood right now, it's not really like a celebratory mood, you know. It would be kind of hard, I think, to really embrace and engage in the joy of something like that when everything around you is falling apart.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a wise idea. Now let's get onto the subject of the episode. So you're here to talk to us a bit about body image, which is so great because it's something that we've spoken about on the show before, but only with women. And I think it's, you know, just even from a wider point of view, body image and body confidence is often seen as a women's conversation. And it's very rare that we actually hear men talk about it. And I think that, you know, exacerbates the problem for men who experience body dysmorphia like you did. So can you explain, I guess, start us off by telling us when you first realized that this was something that you were struggling with?
It's a hard one for me to pinpoint because, like, it's something that definitely still affects me now. And like looking back sort of 10, 15 years, it's really hard to, I mean, that's the thing with mental health, isn't it? I think it's not, for me personally, it wasn't obvious steps. It wasn't like, right, on that day that happened. And then 2 weeks later that happened. It's like, it sort of chips away at me. And I think, and it's scary because before you know it, you're so deep in something that it's not easy to like climb out of. So I think the first time that I, background for listeners, I grew up as a slightly overweight child, not like massively, but definitely not skinny like a lot of my friends, slightly overweight, But I was at that like blissful age of like, I don't know, 10, where I didn't look at my body in that way back then, you know, before social media and stuff. It was just, I was very happy just being like that. And then I went from that to then being, I grew upwards and sort of went inwards at the same time. And I think I started sort of secondary school, and the guys, I guess, around me that were popular, that seemed to be like aspirational, were the rugby and football playing types. And I was really into football, but I was more into kind of singing songs about girls and growing my hair and piercing my nose and having flesh holes and stuff. And I sort of like, I didn't really fit into a category. So I felt slightly isolated anyway. And then I sort of said to myself, it was the era of Hollister Abercrombie sort of like swept my sort of my county massively, and Jack Wills and all that, and all the marketing was men looking in a certain way, and all the boys at my school that were popular would wear those clothes. So I was like, right, I'm going to go buy those clothes. I went into the stores, and you know, it was the time when all of the billboards and stuff were like really ripped men on like a Malibu beach surfing, and I thought, right, I have to be that person then in order to not only be popular, but to perhaps find my place in life, to be accepted, to become a man, I guess. So I went quite quickly into ordering all of the proteins, the supplements, and going to the gym and stuff. And I think it's really difficult, because my source of information and sort of like future plans with fitness was stuff that I saw online. So I would Google, like, I don't know, like military diet, because there was this thing, or like it was the time when like 300 the film came out, and there was like a Spartan diet and all that shit. So my sources were, for me, I thought they were extremely credible sources. You know, they may well be for performance athletes, but for a 16-year-old kid in Dorset reading these extreme diets saying this is what you should do, it was quite a shift. And I think it was noticeable to my parents, but I sort of persuaded myself that was healthy. And I think that's the real problem. You know, we have the terms around, you know, like diets as being like healthy or the best version of yourself and all that stuff. So I thought, yeah, that what I was doing was really, really good for me. So I guess, yeah, 16, 17, I realized that not only did I have to have the supplements on one hand, do the exercise, it also meant I had to cut everything else out, because according to Google and Twitter and whatever, like carbs were the enemy. So I was like, okay, fine. Like, I'm just not going to have carbs anymore. So I went from being very normal, in inverted commas, weight and size, to having, I think I had 7% body fat, just sort of at the start of the band. And if you think, like, you know, people that do the bodybuilding shows, like all that stuff, they've got like 5% body fat or around that. So from that aspect, I was pretty, I thought in my head before I got to that point, I thought that would be my final destination. But the problem is with the fitness industry, it's almost like bankers with money. You think you get to a certain point and you're like, oh shit, actually I want to do more. So even though I had like, I couldn't lose any more fat off my stomach at all, I was looking, I was like, oh, well, my arms are, they could be bigger, or my legs or what. And you just sort of like, I realized that every time I looked in a mirror, I was critiquing myself in various different ways. And it was almost like, yeah, one area would be okay, but then, oh, what about that? And it's just like this regressive cycle where the first thing you think about in the morning was, what am I going to eat today? Can I get to a gym? I'm not happy about myself. And immediately having negative thoughts first thing in the morning as like a 17-year-old guy, it just becomes a horrible thing where you constantly feel tense and a pressure. And it can be seen as like, I think it's easy for people to write it off as vanity, but it's not that. In many ways, it's like self-destructive, how you feel, because I guess at the crux of it, you want to be liked and accepted and happy with yourself. But what you're doing to your body is torturous in many ways, you know, starving myself, not eating bread for a year, having like two whole chicken a day. Like, it's just bizarre things to do at that age. And the amount of dairy and artificial protein that I was putting into my body that I thought was healthy. It's really funny, like the irony, I would I'd go to a hotel when we were like touring and I'd be like, I need to have porridge oats with water so I could put the protein in that I brought from home. But if it would turn up, like the porridge had been made with milk, I was like, oh no, I can't have that. No, it's too fattening. But then the irony that I was then putting in whey protein powder in, that is made from milk. And it's just stupid little things in my mind that I didn't realize were a problem. Yeah. So I think, yeah, age 16, 17 is when I first started realizing that I mean, in my mind, I was adopting a healthy lifestyle. But yeah, looking back, that's when it shifted for me, I think.
Obviously, when you're 16, 17, that is prime, like, I want to be dating, I want to be showing off to girls and, you know, whatever. How much of you wanting to change the way you look, do you think, was linked to wanting to feel desirable, I suppose?
I think at school, it was very apparent because I wanted to, yeah, look like other people. But I think it changed for me when the Vamp started. There was another shift because all of a sudden it wasn't like I wanted to be accepted by a couple of people in my school. It was like I was then like sort of quite instantly recognizable and I guess like famous to an extent within the first year of the Vamps. So I knew that people liked me, but I think it changed in my head as being like something that I could control. And I think I'd gone from living a relatively like chill, easy, normal life in Dorset to then be like on the road, busy from city to city. So the thing that I clung onto was like, right, I'm going to control everything that I put in my body and the fitness that I do, because that's the only thing that I can control. And I think it's all connected in a way. It wasn't even, when at my lowest point, it wasn't the fact to be accepted. I think it just became a weird thing where, yeah, I wanted to cling on to a sense of understanding and controlling my life.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You say, looking back, would you recognize what you were going through as having an eating disorder or a disordered relationship with your body, or would you give it a term or not really?
I think I mean a lot of press has said, you know, like anorexia and stuff, and I'm not sure, but I know it's unhealthy because, you know, when I was at my skinniest point, when I was, how old was I guess, yeah, like 19, you know, so I started when I was, yeah, 15, 16, but by the time I was 19, I've been touring for a couple of years with the Vamps. I was at that really, really low body weight thing. And I ended up having surgery actually, because I wasn't happy with, so I had like really, really skinny abs, defined arms, but like my chest, I had just like tissue and it wasn't fat at all. It's just like breast tissue. And no matter how much I starved myself or went to the gym or whatever, lifted weights, it would never like go. So I ended up, yeah, like having tissue removed. And I, you know, I was like 20-year-old guy on tour in Australia. And I had to wear this like vest thing for like a month. So my insides didn't seep out of the stitches that I'd had. And I was just like, this is fucked up. Like I'm meant to be, you know, I'm in one of the biggest bands in the world at that point, we're touring. I met Kirsty by that point, so I was really, really happy. And I was just like, this is weird. And like, I've never really spoken about that. No one knows about the whole surgery thing. But like, I think it's important now, sort of 8 years on, to think like, because I was watching videos of the Vamps the other day, like, because we can't tour at the moment, obviously. I was on YouTube looking at like old touring videos to remember what it was like. And there's like videos of me like speaking to camera, like acting like I'm like the happiest person there. And then I see I'm wearing this like vest, and I just like, it's just such a bizarre time to look back on. It's almost like it never happened. And I think, yeah, it's only really been the past couple of years that I've realized like that was a really, really strange place for me. And yeah, it still affects me a lot now, but I think luckily, I think being able to do things like this, communicate how I felt about that certain thing, and acknowledging that, it was a dangerous place to be, but like, understanding the route that it took me to get to that point, hopefully will help other people recognize when their tendencies turn into quite dangerous habits.
Yeah, I mean, I really admire you so much for talking about it. Thank you. I think it really will help a lot of people. And, you know, like you said, it's so important to communicate these things, particularly now when we live in this age of social media where everything is kind of curated and it's all like a highlights reel. And it's rare that we see people actually saying, no, you know what, in that photo or in that video where I look really happy and I look like I'm living the best life, I'm in one of the most famous bands, actually I was going through inner turmoil. And it just goes to show that, you know, it's so easy to project this kind of image of perfection when that is obviously so rarely the case. I want to ask you a bit about social media. How do you think your relationship with Instagram and, you know, obviously you have a lot of followers on that platform, how does that impact your relationship with your body?
I think when I was a bit, well, actually no, it's still relevant now, because I think the dangerous thing of social media is whether, I mean, there's been some brilliant people that have come out to try and address this and reduce it, but the vast majority of accounts that I see on my explore page are the best versions of people that they're posting. You know, there's not many people that will actively go out and post a shit picture. And yes, there's been these like trends of like what I actually look like, and that's good. But like from a guy's perspective, there's not many men doing that. Like if I go down my explore page, it's just people in the gym looking massive, or people driving motorcycles and vests, and they're like fucking massive. And it's like that's the scary thing, because if that's all people are seeing on social media, that's what they'll believe to be the norm. And especially when still a lot of those pictures are edited and modified, it's unsurprising that, you know, 16-year-old me thought that those models in Hollister looked like that all year round, and that's not them starving themselves. That is just what they look like. So I think the role social media has in people developing, I guess like disorders with food is really, really, prevalent. But I think it is about trying to acknowledge that those pictures aren't the real, they're not the norm. And I do wonder whether some of these companies should be saying that, you know, or organizations and social media companies should maybe be letting people know that this isn't how people look all the time. I know there was something in the press a few weeks ago about saying when pictures have to be like, accounts have to say when they've like doctored images. I don't know whether that's the answer, but like, I think we have to just, especially from a man's perspective, we have to acknowledge that the people that we do see online, that is not how they look all year round. And it's not achievable. You literally kill yourself to look like that if you do that all year round.
Yeah, you're right. It's terrifying, really. The lengths that people go to in order to sustain that, it's just completely unsustainable. Talk to me a bit about your relationship with Kirsty then. At what point through your journey with all this did she come into your life? And at what point did you have a conversation with her about it, or was it something that she kind of picked up on?
So Kirsty and I met just before the Vamps first ever headline tour, which has been brilliant actually for me, because I've kind of had that anchor throughout the whole of the Vamps, which, you know, we weren't very public in the early years for various different reasons, but behind the scenes, she's been like a rock. And I think it was quite obvious to her, like pretty soon on, that I had like a bit of an issue with food. And it was the sort of thing where I would dictate absolutely everywhere that we'd eat, or I wouldn't eat something, or, you know, it would be like Christmas and I'd still have chicken and vegetables with nothing else. And I think it just kind of got to a point where Kirsty was like, look, we need to try and break this and address it. And there's always that early period when, you know, you've only been together a few months and it's, you know, you don't really feel comfortable enough to like, hey, try and change a massive part of someone's life. But I think just having her there to offer, you know, she kind of took time to listen and acknowledge how I was feeling. And instead of being dismissive and saying like, that's stupid, I think she tried to help understand it. And it's a gradual process. And even still now, you know, 8 years on probably 10 years on from when my issue started, I still do have daily battles with it, but it's just nice having someone there that I know that I can trust and rely on to let me know when I'm slipping into negative tendencies. I think it's been a bizarre sort of period of my life the past 10 years, like massive highs, massive lows, and having that sense of like consistency in a relationship sort of really, really helped me in my darkest times for sure.
And so when you are experiencing those kind of lows, again, as you said, you know, today, what do you do? So obviously I'm guessing you have a conversation with Kirsty, and, you know, what are your other kind of sources of comfort, and who do you look to for support?
I think in the early days, I know that there's been a positive change, because in the early days, lows would go on for months. And that was really, really hard to come out of. And I think now, you know, it's like, especially with coronavirus, not really knowing what's going on. And, you know, I think the music industry may be potentially the biggest hit industry, music and theater. And it's like not knowing what's going to happen over the next 12 months of our life. Really, really, I mean, it affects everyone, but for people like me that are very, very up and down and get anxious and overthink things, you know, yesterday I had just like a really shit day. But I think now what I'm able to do is say to Kirsty, oh, I feel a bit rubbish today. And that's fine. And it's about knowing that you are going to have those days. But for me, I'm able to look at it almost from a third person perspective and say like, you're feeling really rubbish today, but you know, tomorrow is a new day. And I think being able to vocalize that, even to yourself, speaking out loud to yourself or with someone like Kirsty or whatever, or even speaking to the dog, which sounds like I'm loony, but like just physically speaking almost helps you acknowledge how you're feeling. And it's like a therapy to me, communicating how I feel, because I think as soon as you say something, I do a lot of work with an anti-bullying charity, and I was bullied sort of growing up. And for me, as soon as I shared that I was being bullied with someone, it was like a weight, it's like a 5 kilogram weight was lifted off one of my shoulders. And it's like, yes, you still have another 5-1 there, but at least it's sort of like you're sharing the burden a bit. So that's why now I'm able to deal with these low spells a hell of a lot better than I used to. I think like when you ask about who do I look to or whatever, it's really, really important that it's been amazing the past few years that there's been a lot of men that have come out and spoken about things, mental health. I think mental health and you know, and this thing with like negative food, they are so hand in hand, because that's what it is. And I think people that speak about that's really, really, really handy. But also like when we were saying before about maybe how society's become more willing to help each other, I feel that like that's relevant with this as well. I think there's more ears open to these conversations now than in the past. You know, if I'd said this sort of stuff 30 years ago, I don't think we'd be having this conversation now, because I think what we're chipping away at is that male stereotype and that gender construct of a man having to be strong and bulletproof and emotionless. I think all these things help further this conversation and stem really dark thoughts for men and women.
Totally. It's like you said, it's this really like traditional idea of masculinity is like the alpha male being like this bastion of physical strength. And you know, like you said, it's interesting you mentioned the Abercrombie models. Like, we're the same age, I grew up with that as well. And you know what that does is it conditions men to want to look like that, but it also conditions straight women to want to be attracted to that. And then that you know, that creates all sorts of other issues as well, because it's like that's not realistic.
Yeah.
it's just, it's so interesting to listeners who might be, you know, male or female, who might be experiencing some of the same feelings you went through with body dysmorphia and, you know, becoming a bit obsessive about their appearance. What advice would you give to them? You know, I mean, I guess a first port of call maybe would be delete Instagram off your phone for a while. Doesn't help.
Yeah, I did I'm a Celeb. When I came out of that, I was like the happiest I thought I was the happiest I've been in a while, and social media didn't mean anything to me. And I've tried since then to only have Instagram and Twitter installed on my phone when I'm going to post something. So I download it, which is crazy because, you know, I probably download it 5 times a day and then delete it again. But ideally I wouldn't look at it first thing in the morning. I go on the news app instead of Instagram. I try and wake up, go downstairs. And then if I'm going to post something, I'll install it, post it, see my, like, direct messages, and then I'd delete it again and try. I think that's the thing. You have to try and have a separation. I always think that, like, social media should enhance your life as opposed to life enhancing social media, if you see what I mean. So it's like I almost had to swap things around. Instead of my life being planned around, right, what can I do to put that on Instagram? Like, it's, you know, you shouldn't have to have that. It's like waking up first thing thinking about food. Like, I think I was definitely getting to a point where I was waking up thinking about Instagram. It's like, what am I doing? So I'd say, yeah, try and detach yourself from social media as much as possible. But also seek credible, going back to food and fitness, seek credible advice, because I presume that a lot of the accounts that people follow on Instagram aren't reputable sources. And I think it is just, it's education, isn't it? Education and communication. That's how we'll tackle some of these issues.
Now it's time for our Lessons in Love segment. So this is the part of the show where I ask every guest to share something that they have learned about themselves from their previous relationship experiences. So James, what is your lesson in love for us today?
I think my lesson in love is to truly embrace the person that you are. So instead of trying to shroud who you are in, like, whether it's on, like, what the image that you portray on Instagram, or wearing things that you don't feel comfortable in, or doing whatever. For me, definitely, like, the key to Kirsty and I's success as a couple, I guess, would be that she gets the true version of me, as opposed to the guitarist in the Vamps from 10 years ago.
Yeah, I guess you're coming at it from a slightly different experience from most people, because you have this kind of public persona of who you are and I suppose what your relationship is like as well. But, you know, obviously no one knows what goes on within a relationship apart from the two people in that relationship. And I guess that probably seems much more relevant for you than most people.
Yeah, yeah. I do think there's also an element of, like, being proud of who you are. I think a lot of people get scared to be seen as being, like, self-obsessed or arrogant. But, like, I think you have to say, right, this is what I've achieved in my life, and this is what makes me who I am. So I'm going to embrace that. And with me and the Vamps and Kirsty, that they're all hand in hand. Like, I try my best to be, you know, the same on stage as I am off stage. And that's relevant the other way around, where, like, Kirsty is just as much part of my life when I'm in the Vamps as when I'm not. And it's like, I try and include everything. I'm not like, yeah, James one day on TV, then James the next day in his bedroom. It's like, I try to get that synergy, and that's really helped Kirsty and I, because, you know, it's just honest. She knows everything that's going on, and I think that's the key. It's, you know, truthfulness and honesty as well.
That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you were affected by any of the issues we spoke about today, I'd like to direct you to Beat, the UK's leading eating disorder charity. To contact Beat, you can call the charity's helpline on 0808 801 0677 or visit its website, beateatingdisorders.org.uk. For more information or support on body dysmorphia, you can also visit the Body Dysmorphic Disorder Foundation's website at bddfoundation.org. If you're a new listener to Millennial Love, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or anywhere else. You can comment and leave us a rating too, so that more people can find us. And keep up to date with everything to do with the show on Instagram. Just search Millennial Love. See you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.